Do you have a gardening problem? We can help you with that. A program dedicated to help you grow a better garden, maintain your landscape, grow healthier trees, make that grass look a little bit greener, as well as preserving what you grow. We're here to help you with your gardening problem. You're tuned in to Garden Talk Radio.
You're listening to the most informational-packed hour of garden-focused radio in the country and on the internet with your host, husband and wife team, Joey and Holly Baird. This is the Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener Radio Show.
Welcome to the Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener Radio Show. The Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener Radio Show is presented to you by Power Planter Earth Augers, the official digging tool. To find the right size for your digging projects, visit powerplanter.com. Thank you for taking time out of your day to join us to talk gardening for the next hour, whether you're listening to us on one of the 16 stations our show is being broadcasted on here in 2020 through our website, the Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener, thewisconsinvegetablegardener.com, under the Season 4 tab at the top of the page. Podcast replay, in-studio video replay, a radio app, however you may be capturing the program. We thank you. I am your host, Joey Baird. Beside me is my wife, co-host, best friend, and gardening partner,
Holly Baird.
This program is for you, about you, to help your garden grow better, maintain your landscape, get your grass to grow greener and your trees to grow stronger, as well as preserving what you grow. Several ways in which you can communicate with us today. You can send us an email at gardentalkradio@gmail.com. That's gardentalkradio@gmail.com. Or if you want to talk to us, you can get a hold of us right now. 1-800-927-SHOW, 1-800-927-SHOW. If we can't get to you, please leave a message and we will call you back. We got a show lined up for you, a good show lined up, which we do every week. We value your time, and so we want to present to you topics which is valuable to your property and your life. We're going to talk about growing mums, all about mums, not moms, mums, and evergreen care and diseases. Plus, our guest is author Wendy Williams and your garden questions. So, Holly, let's get into the program. Talk about mums, M-U-M-S, the flower.
Yep. So, mums are a very common fall flower that you see at pretty much any garden center,
right,
even outside of grocery stores.
The mums have come. The mums are here. It's the pumpkins and the mums. Yeah. That's the yeah, kind of the consensus.
That, like, you don't have to go far to find mums. So yeah, if you want to add mums to your landscape, the best time is now, basically.
You want to plant them in the ground. I mean, you can put them in containers. You can put them in raised beds, however you want to do it, but in the ground is, you know, the traditional way to do such. And there's all types of mums. There are cold hardy mums that can survive the winter and thrive as a perennial. Now, perennials mean they will come back year after year. Annuals mean that they will come back, or they will grow one growing season and then they will die off. And in some instances, that annual will drop seed for the next generation to germinate and grow at the appropriate time during your particular geographical area.
Right. So that's correct. So they are cold hardy. They survive. They do their perennial thing. So one thing you want to think about is maybe what you want to do with your mums. If you want to, I mean, obviously you're going to add them to your
landscape. Yeah.
So if you think about, like, what color you might like.
Well, here's the thing with anything, with vegetable trees, shrubs, whatever. Know where you're going to plant the particular item and know how many particular items you have space for. So you don't go to the garden center in spring and buy 38 tomato plants and you can only find a spot for 7 of them because you like all the varieties. Same thing with the mums, that you don't want to get 6 or 7 mums. And then you really don't have the locations in which you can plant them. And then you have to figure out, what do I do now? So there's some things we need to be aware of with mums. Mums have the best chance of surviving winter when you plant them in September. So we're past that particular time frame. But in some parts of the country, it is just as warm, or just as the temperature has not fluctuated to a great degree that it was a couple of weeks ago. So you want to keep that in mind.
Right. That's definitely a good tip. So another one is that darker mums tend to hold their color longer. So as the flowers fade, you won't notice it as much. So if you are growing mums or planting mums or adding mums to your containers, whatever, and you're like, I want these to pop for a long time, you want to use the darker ones.
Right. And you can also deadhead them. That kind of helps the procedure of getting rid of the old ones and kind of stimulating the new growth on the plant as well.
Right. That's definitely what you want to do. You do want to deadhead them, and that also helps prevent them from becoming leggy. And so they have that nice, like, bushy
form. Yeah. And when we deadhead, there are people who will go in there and just grab it around their fingers and pop it off. Really, the best application or procedure is to get scissors or clippers, something to cut it, make a smooth, clean cut, and that will be better for the plant. Kind of the same of ripping your fingernail off that's a little long with your teeth versus clean cutting it with a pair of scissors or clippers or fingernail snips. Kind of the same outlook there for the plant.
Right. That's definitely a great tip. Another thing is keeping in mind that they have shallow roots. So when you water them, you want to make sure you're not oversaturating them because of those shallow roots. They could get root rot a little bit quicker. So you want some really well-draining soil. They can kind of grow in any type of soil, but it has to be well-draining. Otherwise, if you have clay or clumpy or whatever soil, and those shallow roots can become problematic.
Now, the mums are going to bloom for about 7 weeks. It's kind of their framework there in the fall. And you plant them in areas that get 6 hours or more of sunlight. So the high spectrum of the partial shade to the full sun aspect of it, we kind of label partial shade 5-6 hours is kind of where we're at when we define what partial shade is. So 6 hours to full sun is the best place in which you can plant them. Now, a thing that you want to keep in mind about these mums is you may be full sun right now because the leaves have all dropped off some of the trees around, but in the spring they may not, you know, that type of thing. Be aware of what is going to come versus what is visually there right now.
Right. That's definitely a good point. And a nice thing about mums is that you can plant them in containers. So if you have other annuals that maybe are dying back, whether that be your pansies or your petunias or what have you, you can replace those with mums and still have that color for a while.
And when they will come back in the spring, right? Because they're a perennial, but they won't really bloom until fall again, correct?
Right. So that's what they like. They like those cooler evenings. So once we start to get cooler evenings is when they're going to come back.
So while the yellow, red, orange, and rust color of mums, also called chrysanthemums, are associated with the fall, mums can bloom in the spring. The conditions for mums to bloom can be right in the spring as well as in the fall. Early blooming of mums can be cut back to allow more flowers. Once in bloom, in the springtime, the period in which the blooms can occur is about 4 to 6 weeks early on. And once in bloom, the mums will continue to flower. And as long as you take care of them and they're in the correct location, you can deadhead, and that will help produce more and the maximum potential of flowers in the spring. So based on the type of mums, you can get both. You can get some fall colors as well as spring colors. So you're keeping them happy and healthy and maintained so you can not have to go to the garden center next fall at this time and buy more mums, but you can have an establishment that has been created in your landscape where your summertime flowers have faded away and the mums will fill in those gaps of color that you're looking for to maintain all the way up to the cold temperatures and snowfall.
Right. And so they can grow pretty much in any zone. If you are growing in anywhere between zone 3 to 6, you want to look for the early blooming varieties. And then once they die back, you want to cover them, whether it be with like some evergreen boughs or burlap to help them.
So we're not mowing them back over, or we're not trimming them down to the ground. We're just covering them as a protective layer if we feel that we need to.
Right. Correct.
And we, again, the key to all of this is location. have good soil. If you need to add good soil, you need to incorporate that because, yeah, the plants, the mums are, is going to look beautiful in the container at the garden center, at the grocery store. But if you have crummy soil and you plant it, that plant is going to react to the soil in which you put it in. So the dietary aspect of the plant is going to reflect how lack of nutrients the soil which it is planted in has.
But that's only if you are going to plant them permanently. If you're going to use them in a container, you know, just I would choose whatever is going to look good. And that's what a lot of people do. They put them aside from, you know, next to their hay bales and their pumpkins and their
In the
corn
container
stalks.
That they came from.
Yeah.
Or sometimes they'll up-pot them. But the likelihood of them surviving the winter in a container is a little less than if it was physically in the ground because the ground doesn't freeze as hard as you think it does, like a block of ice or like a block of soil would in a container.
Right. But it's, I'm just saying that people are using them to accent their landscape, you don't have to worry about your soil necessarily. Just make sure you deadhead them and you keep watering them and they should last you well past.
Well, till snow in the places that snow occurs.
close to early winter or whatever, you know, late fall, what have you.
And there's all different colors of mums, much like there's multiple different colors of other flowers. So it's kind of what's available in your area is really the key to that type of thing or what you can get a hold of. Now, again, you can order stuff online, and that's great, but if you can support the local independent garden centers that this year needs the most help, go to there, follow their protocol, and purchase, you know, their pumpkins and their mums or their ornamental peppers or whatever they may have for your fall decoratorial needs would be the best thing to do to help support them because they've supported you in the past.
For sure. Definitely want to support your local garden center.
And so, you know, if you've never grown mums before, this may be the year to try it. And if you're uncertain of how the mums are going to react into your ecosystem, because every backyard is slightly different. For example, our backyard, the large garden, which is Holly's mom's backyard, seems to, and this has been for a decade now, doesn't get hit by the frost like the adjacent properties do for whatever reason.
It's like in its own little microclimate pocket or something.
Right. So whenever the frost is coated on the roofs of the neighboring properties, there's nothing on the garden. So keep that in mind that if you're concerned about how things are going to react, you can get a couple of mums, set them up, and then you can always add to them year after year and create a very established growing bed that will pop in the spring and the fall as the colors of the spring and summer pass away.
Definitely. Well, thank you for taking time out of your day to listen to our show. This is our 32nd show of 2020. Did you miss last week's show? We talked about best indoor edible plants, all about pumpkins, and our guest was Emma from Food is Free Milwaukee. You can listen to that show by going to your favorite podcast platform and searching the Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener podcast, or we'll make it even easier to find them. Send us an email to gardentalkradio@gmail.com, and in the subject line, put show 31. And we will send you the link. We will be right back. Do not go anywhere. We'll be talking about evergreen care. You're listening to the Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener Radio Show, a program to help you grow a better garden, maintain your landscape, help your trees grow better, make that grass look greener, and preserving what you grow for indoor and out.
Got a question for Joey and Holly? Send it via email anytime to gardentalkradio@gmail.com.
Do your trees look sad? When we here at the Wisconsin Vegetable Gardens have a tree or shrub issue, Dr. Jim's is the product we reach for as it is the product that works. It really provides results. Their small batch, extra potent blend of readily available nutrients is exactly what your trees, plants, and bushes need to regain their health and stay bug free. It's super easy to use. It feeds the microbes and adds new life to your soil so you can grow stronger plants. Chemical-free, environmentally responsible fertilizer that works. It will put a smile on your face and your plants. To find out more about Tree Secret and other products, visit drjims.com. That's drjims.com.
Trim Bin turns any chair into a workstation. Comfortably sort your herbs, dried flowers, cannabis, and more. Easily collect pollen with a static brush and mirror finish collection tray. High walls keep your work contained. To get yours, visit harvest-more.com. Made in California.
Do not go anywhere. There is more of the Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener Radio Show to come, which is presented to you by Power Planter Earth Augers, the official digging tool. To find the right size for your digging project, visit powerplanter.com.
The number one key to healthy, productive plants are the roots. Starting from seed to full-grown plants, RootMaker.com has the answer. From seed starting trays with an innovative design that air prunes the roots, creating a fabulous root system, never again will you have root-bound plants. To multiple gallon grow bag sizes to raised beds, RootMaker.com has your grow needs covered. Visit RootMaker.com. Use coupon code TWVG at checkout and get 10% off your entire order. Brought to you by Blue Ribbon Organics, providing locally made organic compost and soil blends for gardens, farms, landscaping, and more. Visit BlueRibbonOrganics.com or call 262-497-8539 to find their products nearest you.
Blue Mel's Garden and Landscape Center offers an awesome selection of high-quality garden and landscape products. We have just the plants you're looking for. Annuals, perennials, veggies, herbs, and more. Plus, you can always count on us to answer all of your questions and offer expert advice. Blue Mills also carries the largest selection of bulk landscape materials in the area. Enjoy a beverage from our coffee shop while your kids run around in our huge playground. Join our growing list of highly satisfied customers. Visit the garden center that offers everything you're looking for. Visit Blue Mills today.
Blue Mills, 4930 West Loomis Road, 414-282-4220. The Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener Radio Show is brought to you by the following: Neptune Harvest, Happy Leaf LED, Dripworks, We Grow Indoors, Deer Defeat, Harvest More, Blue Ribbon Organics, Blue Mills Landscape and Garden Center, Chip Drop. Find all sponsors at thewisconsinvegetablegardener.com and thank them for their support.
Now back to the Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener Radio Show, which is presented to you by Power Planter Earth Augers, the official digging tool. To find the right size for your digging project, visit powerplanter.com. Now here are your hosts, Joey and Holly Baird.
Welcome back to the Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener Radio Show. You want a plant, or I guess it would be a tree, that stays green all year long? Requires really very little maintenance, but can create a barrier between properties and habitat for the wildlife in your area, in your neighborhood, on your farm, your homestead. Well, evergreen trees probably is the answer to that requirement. Evergreen trees require very little maintenance, very little trimming. If left naturally, they will grow to the traditional form that we're familiar with. But they do require watering, especially the first year if they're not naturally planted in that environment, and you need to properly water it. Now, evergreens come in a multitude of different varieties or species, I guess would be the correct terminology, Holly. About how many are we looking at?
Well, there's about 15 very popular ones.
Okay.
And then there's also ones that might be like more of like a hybrid, you know, things
cross.
Change.
Yeah,
throughout the years. So, yeah.
Well, see, growing up on the farm, one of the properties that we had at the old home place, I went to the woods and just took a 5-gallon bucket and just dug up little saplings or little Christmas trees, little evergreens, brought them and planted them in that area. And they grew very, very well. Now, these were not the traditional Bob Ross happy painting Christmas tree evergreen trees like you see. But I did have enough friends, and they all liked each other, so I planted them all together. But that worked very well. Now, what many people may choose to do is on their homestead, on their city lot, they will go to their garden center and purchase specific spruces or varieties of evergreens in order to create a barrier, create a wall, a living wall, so to speak, to keep their privacy.
Right. And that's, you know, that people a lot of times will do that even in the city with those smaller arbor vitae,
mm-hmm.
which is a kind of evergreen. So yeah, that's definitely an option. So the biggest thing that when it comes to planting evergreens is choosing the correct place. So evergreens do have some difficulty when it comes to high winds and dry areas,
mm-hmm.
or dry soil areas. So if you are trying to build a property wall, you might want to consider that if it's a if it's an area where that might get a lot of high winds, it could hurt the evergreen.
Well, here, growing up on the farm, I was always told when we bought a new piece of property, oh, that soil's no good because there's a lot of evergreen Christmas trees growing on it. So we'll turn that into a pasture or whatever the case. So how true is that? Oh, it must be poor soil because there's pine trees on it.
It's not completely.
Or evergreen trees. Pine trees are different than evergreen to a certain degree, yeah.
Right. It's not completely true, but they can handle some clay. So it's not poor soil necessarily, but it could be. I mean, there's a chance. They are a little bit more forgiving than like a tomato plant.
Right. But also you have to keep in mind that if nature put three or four or five evergreens in part of a plain, they're going to reproduce and more little evergreens will continue to develop and grow. And then you begin to have an evergreen forest. Just the progression of nature. So we do want to water if we are buying a specific species of evergreen from our garden center and we plant it. We want to plant it in the same level in which it came in the container. And then we want to water it regularly. And like I said at the beginning, we don't have to necessarily prune or trim or shape or mold it. It will somewhat do that on its own. That's how they grow.
Right. That's correct. You don't have to do a lot of maintenance in regards to that. One thing you want to keep in mind is snow or ice. Mm-hmm. So if you do live in an area that gets both or either, those branches, since they are kind of heavy to begin with those needles, once snow and ice gets on them, especially ice, that can weigh them down more and then that could cause them to snap off and break. So you want to be mindful of that. And it can stress the plant out, and that's not good either. So you definitely want to think about that. Now, if you ever do need to fertilize them, they do sell different fertilizers for your evergreen. And you want to make sure that when you plant it, you don't fertilize it in the planting hole. You would fertilize it after you plant
it. Okay. And evergreens are very slow growers. So I don't want you to think that, oh, we're going to put 12 evergreens in the back of the property, and that will blow that'll grow a living wall in just a few years. They are very slow growers and can greatly absorb the nutrients in the soil. And then in very sandy areas, the pH is more basic, your evergreen may have difficulty absorbing the nutrients that it needs. And then you will begin to see a palish green on the needles. This may be a lack of nitrogen, just like in the garden, tomatoes or peppers, or whatever. If that discoloration starts to occur, your first instinct should be maybe it needs nitrogen. Maybe it's not getting enough green, nitrogen in order to green up correctly. So then you would add a requirement that has a higher first number. Obviously, we don't want to eliminate or forget about the potassium and phosphate, the second and third numbers. But we want to be aware of what we're getting ourselves into.
Definitely. And so there are some problems that...
Well before we want to use a slow release fertilizer to start off with. If we get to see this problem persist very rapidly, then we want to look at like a tree secret from Dr. Jim's. It's a liquid that will instantly allow the plant to uptake the nutrient to try to fix the problem more rapidly than slower.
Right. And sometimes even if they look a little less than green, just giving them a boost of nitrogen can be helpful too. So
a natural energy shot.
Yeah, exactly. So there are some problems that evergreens can have. And one of them is bagworms. And so bagworms are, I think, a type of caterpillar. Yeah. And so you can check for those in the late winter or early spring. And then if you want to, it's best just to remove them. You'll see these like little cocoons hanging from the evergreen, and then they could potentially eat the evergreen or kind of harm it in that way, damage it. So you want to get rid of the bagworms.
Now, there's good needle drop and there is bad needle drop. The natural progression of the tree growing, it's naturally going to lose a certain number of needles or a certain percentage of needles over the growing season and over the lifespan. And that's why you see pine needles underneath pine trees. What you want to be not doing, you do not want to go in there and rake those things up to bare soil, because that is a protective mechanism in which the tree has implemented by nature over thousands of years in order to protect itself. Yes, you can, you know, if there's 3 or 4 or 5 inches of pine needles that have fail there. Pine needles take a very long time to break down, and while on the tree, the pH level of those pine needles are about 3.5 on the acidity scale, 7 being neutral and 14 being alkaline. You can utilize those needles once they have fallen, because in the garden, as a mulch, because by the time they will break down, that 3.5 has neutralized. And the garden myth that pine needles will make your soil acidic, you put pine needles around blueberry plants because it will make the soil acidic, simply is not true. Science has debunked that multiple times over. So you can utilize pine needles as a great mulch that doesn't break down. So if you have a lot of pine needles, you can put them around your asparagus plants or your rhubarb or a perennial area, so, and keep building it up. That works very, very well in that aspect. But there is bad needle drop, too.
Right. So, yep, there is bad needle drop. So there's a few different things. One is called tip blight, and it's called Diplodia tip blight. And it's very common, especially if you have an Austrian pine, and you'll see that the tips of the branches turn brown and die. And this usually starts at the bottom branches and moves its way up. So you can prune out the infected tips, and that will slow the progress of the disease.
So you want to be aware of this. It's not, if you live on a farm, you don't really, you know, pay much attention. But if you've got these specifically growing in your property for property value, for protection, for privacy, it's very important to be aware of the problems that it may be developing.
Right. And a lot of these problems will develop at the base of the tree, and
which is beneficial, that you don't have to get on a ladder and go, well, I think this, you can physically look at it right then and there as you walk up to it.
Right. And that's something to keep in mind. You can take a look at your tree, walk around it, you know, a few times a year and think, okay, this branch is turning brown and going to fall off. What is causing this?
And if you do not, I mean, the internet is a phenomenal tool. However, when it comes to the health and well-being of your evergreen tree, your maple tree, your pine, your oak tree, your whatever elm tree, it is well worth the investment to get a hold of a certified arborist for them to come out. And these people have gone to school for a long time. They've seen a lot of things. And then they will be able to address the situation and say, here's what we need to do. Here's what you don't need to do. Maybe we can inject it with some type of liquid in order to allow the healing process, like an IV for the tree. That is a real thing, to get the tree back going again. Because if an arborist can inject a tree or treat a tree and you get 10 more years out of it rather than just mowing it down, that's a big, big deal, because 10 years is a long time if you can get that much more life out of a tree versus just mowing it down and planting some shrubs or something else in that location.
Definitely. So then another issue would be pine needle scale. And just like any scale, this is a problem. A lot of times it just eats your whole tree. This happened to one of our dwarf lime.
Dwarf lime trees,
tree.
Yeah.
Thank you. And so basically, excuse me, scales are little bugs, little insects, and then they crawl between, like, the, on ours, it was like they kind of hosted off of the leaves for that. And so on this one, on the pine needle scale, is they do the same thing. And they hatch a bunch of eggs, and it can be problematic. So if you can catch it quickly, then you can help eradicate it, and it's not good.
White pine decline. I want to touch on that one before we get out of the segment, because I think that one's quite important. White pine are not well adapted to heavy clays and humidity of the summer. So this is not the type of tree in which you want to grow if you're in the southern areas or you're in a very hot climate. It doesn't do well. Consequently, they may struggle to establish a robust root system, and that's the whole key to these things, is get that good root system so it can reach out, branch out under the ground and get the nutrients and nutriences that they need. They will decline over time and develop other disease problems. Provide white pines with good, well-drained soil and ample moisture during dry periods. And so it's, you know, when we talk about watering, especially on younger trees that are not very well established, it's not uncommon, it's not a bad thing to have an irrigation system set up to water trees. Everybody thinks irrigation has to be vegetables and flowers, but it can be, and many people do hook it up for their trees.
Right. And I think that this also, the white pine decline, the white pine problem, well, it kind of debunks your old wives' tale that, oh, that land is bad because right. It has bad soil or whatever, has trees on it. But where you grew up, it's hot and humid, so I highly doubt that there's going to be white pine trees there.
Right.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of other problems in which one will face or can face with their evergreen trees. We just wanted to address it to get some information out to you. Well, Holly, summer's over. Kids are virtually learning. Nights are cold, getting colder. Soon there'll be snow on the ground, and you've forgotten about your yard. But never fear, there's still time to help your yard.
Just because it is fall, we don't want to forget about our yards and those Japanese beetles. They may be gone, but they're not far. Not only did they feast on your roses and berries this summer, they laid eggs in your turf so they can start again next year.
Oh, no.
Take a stand with Phylum's Grub Gone. Grub Gone is a non-chemical BT granular that specifically targets scarab pests and their larvae. Simply apply the granular with a spreader, irrigate it into the soil, and let the naturally occurring bacteria do its job.
Not only is Grub Gone easy to use, but the only non-chemical choice that effectively controls grubs. And the best part about it, it's non-toxic to bees and other pollinators and beneficials. In fact, Grub Gone has no label restrictions for use around flowering plants, so you do not have to get on your knees and remove those dandelions before you apply the product. To find out more about Grub Gone and other products that Phylum Bioproducts has for your yard, Phylum Bioproducts, that's Phylum Bioproducts.com, PhylumBioproducts.com. It's the natural choice. Do not let the grubs and the Japanese beetles win in your garden. Do not go anywhere. When we come back, it's Wendy Williams, author, Language of the Butterflies. You're listening to the Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener Radio Show, a program to help your garden grow better, maintain your landscape, grow healthier trees, make your grass look greener, as well as preserving what you grow indoors and out.
You can bet the Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener's phone lines are always jammed during the show. So Joey and Holly keep their phone lines open 24/7 to help you. Call anytime 24/7. Just dial 1-800-927-7469. Or just remember 1-800-927-SHOW. S-H-O-W. Leave a message and they will call you back.
Planting conditions are always favorable with the Power Planter Earth Auger. No matter what the job is, Power Planter has the right size for you. Simply attach to a drill and let the Power Planter do the work for you, creating holes fast and efficiently with ease. Find the size that fits your project at powerplanter.com.
Did you know fall is the best time to plant grass? It's true. With Pearl's premium ultra-low maintenance grass seed, it needs mowing only once every 4 to 6 weeks rather than weekly. Pearl's premium grass grows 4 foot deep roots, so it needs 75% less water and outcompetes other grasses and most weeds without chemicals and stays green year round. Buy Pearl's premium grass at Whole Food Markets in New England, quality garden centers, or buy online at pearlspremium.com. That's pearlspremium.com. And put in the discount code my name, Joey20. That's Joey 20 for 20% off discount today and tomorrow only. PearlsPremium.com, the best grass seed you'll ever grow.
Do not go anywhere. There is more of the Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener Radio Show to come. which is presented to you by Power Planter Earth Augers, the official digging tool. To find the right size for your digging project, visit powerplanter.com.
Pomona's Universal Pectin is a high-quality pectin that gels reliably with low amounts of any sweetener. If you're trying to reduce the amount of sugar in your diet, you'll love Pomona's Universal Pectin. Now you can make healthy homemade jams and jellies sweetened to your taste. You can use sugar or honey to sweeten. Pomona's Universal Pectin keeps indefinitely when stored in an airtight container. Easy to use, versatile, and comes with directions and recipes in every box. Find out more and where to buy at PomonaPectin.com. Also available at natural food stores and online.
The Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener Radio Show is brought to you by the following. Phylum Bioproducts, Dr. Jim's, MI Greenhouse LLC, Green Gobbler, Water Hoop, Seed Savers Exchange. Find all sponsors at thewisconsinvegetablegardener.com and thank them for their support.
It's fall now, and Blue Mel's Landscape and Garden Center still has the items that you need for your property, for your jobs. The bulk material yard will be open until the end of October, so you can either pick it up or have it delivered and even work on it past that time frame. But that's when that yard, the bulk material, will be available till, as well as they have pumpkins have arrived, as well as ornamental peppers. They have mums. They've got what you need for your fall fun activities. Blue Mel's Landscape and Garden Center at 4930 West Loomis Road, just off of Layton and Greenfield. Give them a call at 414-282-4220. You can visit them online at bluemels.com.
Now back to the Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener Radio Show, which is presented to you by Power Planter Earth Augers, the official digging tool. To find the right size for your digging project, visit powerplanter.com. Now here are your hosts, Joey and Holly Baird.
Welcome back to the Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener Radio Show. Holly, let's go to the hotline and bring in our guest for this week.
Wendy Williams is an author, but also has a lifetime career in journalism, working first as a reporter for the Daily Newspaper, then as an independent. Her work has been published in a myriad of places, ranging from the Wall Street Journal and the New York Times to Ladies Home and Home Journal and Audubon. As a daily journalist, she has won many awards. Her website is wendywilliamsauthor.com. Welcome to the program, Wendy.
Well, thanks for inviting me.
Well, we thank you for taking time out of your day to not only join Holly and myself and educate us, but all of our listeners across the country. We thank you for that.
I'm glad to be here.
So I want to start out with, as a journalist, what inspired you to write books about science and nature? Where was the connection or maybe the disconnect there that brought that avenue to you?
Well, I grew up in the outdoors. As a child, I was outdoors a lot. I had horses and dogs and went to like to go on long hikes and canoe and things like that. And I've also been interested in science. So as an adult, I became interested in how science can explain to us some of the things that we see in nature that we take for granted. There's the world all around us is something that we see, but we don't think a lot about it. And that certainly was true with butterflies when I started to research them.
Now, speaking of that, you have a recent book, The Language of Butterflies. What is the book all about, and what can our listeners to expect when they read it?
Well, I started to research a book about conservation success stories. But the first story that I started to research was a project in upstate New York where a very small but beautiful butterfly had almost become extinct. So I drove up there. I live in Massachusetts on Cape Cod. I drove up there, and the story behind how that butterfly was taken care of, was protected, was quite marvelous. It took them more than two decades to figure out why the butterfly just wasn't increasing in numbers. The more they did to try to help the butterfly, the more the numbers decreased. So they stuck with it, and after two decades, they finally learned that what they needed to do was adopt a whole regimen of burning the entire system in this area. It was a brushy system, and they learned that they needed to burn small parts of that system in order for it to regenerate. And when the entire system regenerated, then the butterflies came back in astonishing numbers. So I decided that the things that I learned there merited an entire book about butterflies, and that's what I ended up doing.
Well, that's interesting. Now, whenever you did the research, what was something that just stuck out to you? You were like double checked your facts to make sure that was like something that was actually accurate, that you was very amazed by.
You know, the whole book was like that for me. I really have to be honest with you. Butterflies are something that we take for granted, that we see all over the place, and we don't really think about them. I started to learn something about what the scales are like on butterfly wings. As some people know, butterflies and moths are part of a group of animals that are called Lepidoptera. That's the Latin name for them. And basically that means insects that have scales, because only butterflies and moths have scales. So I started learning about scales. And the first thing I learned was that when scientists or other people work with butterflies, sometimes they have to put a mask over their face because the scales are so small that they can breathe them in and become ill from the scales. The scales can cause asthma. And then recently, with more powerful microscopes, researchers have learned that these scales actually have their own microscopic intricate shapes to them, and that the colors on these scales don't come from pigments. It's not a blue pigment or a green pigment or a red pigment, or in the case of the monarchs, an orange pigment. It comes from the shape of the scales, and the shape of the scales reflects or bends the light in such ways that you see these particular colors. So that I found to be really interesting. But I also found to be interesting the instrument that the butterfly has called the proboscis. It's kind of like their nose. Another proboscis is the elephant's trunk, but of course it's quite different. And recently scientists have learned that the proboscis, which is what the insect uses to get nourishment from flowers, isn't really a drinking straw at all, like most people have thought it was for hundreds, if not thousands, of years. It's really more like a blotter. It works, it blots up the nourishment from the flowers the same way that a paper towel might blot up something that you spill in your kitchen. So that was really interesting, too. And I was fascinated to learn the whole cycle of monarch butterflies, how they fly all the way down to Mexico. At the end of the book, I went with my husband to go up to the top of the mountain in Mexico where they spend the winter and see that. And that was really quite a thrilling sight. There's just nothing like it that I've ever seen anywhere, and I've spent my entire career writing about nature. It was just beautiful. It's like a stained glass window when they all fly out of those trees like that. So I can't really think of it. Just one thing that amazed me. I was amazed by everything that I learned.
Well, let's talk about the monarch butterfly, because it's still, it's not as healthy as it once was. There's some still concerned of endangerment issues. And can you elaborate on, they come out of Mexico and they fly up the East Coast, the West Coast, and the central portions of the United States. Different times, is it all one species of monarch, or are there multiple species of that type of butterfly?
That's a good question, actually. There's one species of monarch butterfly, but this one species of monarch butterfly does all kinds of different things. The most common behavior is that the monarchs spread across the United States, all the way up into Canada, across a summer, over a summer. And then at just about this time of year, they begin to migrate south. And they, during the summer, they live independent lives, spread throughout the fields, finding whatever nectar they can. And then about this time, when the angle of light changes, the monarchs start to gather in bigger and bigger groups, and they start to fly south. And as they start to fly south, they start with little streamlets of butterflies flying south, and those streamlets become streams of butterflies, and the streams of butterflies become rivers. And then, by the time they are ready to fly over the Texas border into Mexico, they're really a very thick river of butterflies. They fly all the way down almost to Mexico City, and they turn a sharp right almost. Nobody knows why. But they come out of the valley where Mexico City is, and they start to fly up in the mountains. They get up to the mountains that are somewhere around 10,000 feet high, and they spend the winter there overwintering. It's not really hibernating the way we think of bears hibernating, but they calm down their biological systems so they don't use as much energy, so they don't need to find as much nectar. And they wait there for a couple of months until there's a right period of cold weather, followed by a good period of warm weather, and until the angle of the sun changes. And then they start their journey all the way back north again. It's really quite an amazing cycle.
I would have to agree. So we are talking with Wendy Williams. She is an author. So you have a few other books that you have written about nature. Could you tell our listeners what those books are and what they're about?
Well, I wrote a book called The Horse, The Epic History of Our Noble Companion. Of course, as a five-year-old, I was fascinated with horses and have spent my life with horses. And I wanted to find out, as I get older, I'm going to be 70 in a couple of weeks, I want to know why do we have all these things on our planet? Why are horses here? Why are butterflies here? Now I'm starting to work on a book about dogs. Where do they come from? Why are they so special to us? So I looked into the whole idea of horses, that they turned out to have evolved here, right here in America. They're a North American product from 56 million years ago. Then they traveled all over the world, and for reasons that no one can quite explain, horses disappeared from the North American plains. They became extinct. And then when Europeans came to the New World, they brought the horses over on the ships. Hard to think of horses traveling on ships that long ago, 400 or so years ago. But they did, and now the horses have returned to the world in which they first appeared 56 million years ago. So I thought that was a great story. And I wrote a book about squid because I live near the ocean, not on the ocean, but near the ocean, and we have a common little squid here called loligo, a tiny little thing that people sometimes eat for dinner. But it turns out that squid has a particular kind of neuron, which is a cell in the brain, that is so large and easy to work with that 100 years ago, scientists used that cell in the loligo squid to study how our brain cells work, because we have the same brain cells that squid have. I thought that was a pretty amazing story.
Absolutely. And on the horses there are still places in North America and the United States where their horses are wild and running free, just like deer or bear are, which I find fascinating.
Well, we have free roaming horses here, by which I mean that, stockmen or cowboys or ranchers would have put those horses back out on the plains. But what's different about them is that they were once domesticated and have become free roaming now. We don't have any genuinely wild horses left in America. Those genuinely wild horses became extinct before human beings came over from the other half of the planet. So all the horses that we have free roaming here were released by conquistadors, by cowboys, by ranchers. Who knows? Maybe some of them escaped. But they really are all stock that came from the stock that was brought over here from Europe.
Always learning something on the show, Holly.
Yeah, for sure. Well, we really appreciate you having you on. Can you tell our listeners how to get a hold of you, how to find your books, how to find your information?
The easiest way to find me is to find me on Facebook, Wendy Williams, obviously. But you can also find my website, Wendy Williams Author. If you put that into Google, my website will turn up. And there's all kinds of information about me and all kinds of information about the books that I wrote.
Well, Wendy, we greatly appreciate you taking time out of your day, not only to educate Holly and myself, but all of our listeners from across the country. And we thank you very much for that.
Well, thanks for inviting me.
Absolutely. And when we come back, it's all about your garden questions and our garden answers. You're listening to the Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener Radio Show.
Got a question for Joey and Holly? Send it via email anytime to gardentalkradio@gmail.com.
Protect your plants against damage with a 3-in-1 plant guard and special blend fertilizer. Visit ivyorganics.com.
Wisconsin Greenhouse Company designs greenhouses specifically built for the northern Midwest climate. All of their greenhouses are made to withstand heavy snow and wind for years to come. They build freestanding and home-attached greenhouses for both commercial growers, schools, and backyard gardeners. Visit WisconsinGreenhouseCompany.com. For more information on pricing or to request a greenhouse catalog, go to WisconsinGreenhouseCompany.com.
Do not go anywhere. There is more of the Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener Radio Show to come, which is presented to you by Power Planter Earth Augers, the official digging tool. To find the right size for your digging project, visit powerplanter.com.
At Big Elk Garlic Farm, they are passionate about their garlic and take great care to provide you with the best seed stock around. Their high-quality garlic is non-GMO. They stand behind their product 100%. Get your garlic for this fall's planting at BigElkGarlicFarm.com.
When it comes to bulk landscaping materials, Blue Mills Garden and Landscape Center is where everyone goes. Whatever the project, we have the materials you need with over 40 varieties to choose from. Soils, mulches, gravels, decorative stones, fresh cut sod. Blue Mills has these products in stock and ready for easy pickup or fast delivery. So what are you waiting for? Now is the time to get your yard back into shape. Stop in and pick these materials up or call us for delivery today. Nobody does bulk landscaping materials better than Blue Mills Garden and Landscape Center.
Blue Mills, 4930 West Loomis Road, 414-282-4220.
The Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener Radio Show is brought to you by the following: Power Planter Earth Augers, Ivy Organics, Root Maker, Pomona Universal Pectin, Chapin Manufacturing Incorporated, Pro Plugger, Tomato Snaps, World's Coolest Floating Rain Gauge. Find all sponsors at thewisconsinvegetablegardener.com and thank them for their support.
Now back to the Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener Radio Show, which is presented to you by Power Planter Earth Augers, the official digging tool. To find the right size for your digging project, visit powerplanter.com. Now here are your hosts, Joey and Holly Baird.
Welcome back to the Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener Radio Show. Question and answer time. If you've got a question, we may have an answer for you. You can get a hold of us by sending us an email at gardentalkradio@gmail.com. That's gardentalkradio@gmail.com. That will get you direct contact with us. If you'd much rather talk to us, you can do that by giving us a call at 1-800-927-SHOW, 1-800-927-SHOW. Easy for you to remember, so it's always ready for you at any given time. And that phone line, if you can't call during the show, you can certainly call anytime, 24/7. We leave our phone lines open for that particular reason. Had a number of questions come in this week, Holly, so let's just go down the list that we have.
So Daniel asks, I have a large asparagus bed at our new property. These weeds are getting a little out of control. I'd like to mulch areas in the garden to help reduce weeds. What type of mulch is best? I would like a mulch walking path spread in the rhubarb bed and asparagus patch. Should I use a natural mulch or shredded bark mulch? What would be the best practice?
Well, you would want to do a natural mulch, preferably, you know, we want to avoid, when I say natural, I mean like not rubber, you know, rubber tire chips like on a playground. You could use straw, you could use leaves, you could use pine needles. However, that's not going to last very long. I would recommend, wood chips. If you can get a hold of, sign up for Chip Drop and have them, deliver to your property, or you can, if you have access to wood chips or a wood chipper, or you can get a good deal this time of year on wood chips, at a garden center, you certainly would be better off going that route. And that would, you know, build it 2 or 3 inches high. And then over the course of 3 or 4 or 5 years, you're going to have to add to that as the wood chips begin to break down and feed the soil. But, you know, you could put around your rhubarb and put around your asparagus would be ideal. We have that issue currently with our asparagus patch. It's only 10 plants. However, we planted it from 1 year crowns this year, and the weeds have overtaken that. Now the fronds are still growing, and it will take about it'll take 2 more years before we actually be able to harvest asparagus off that bed. But we are going to look at some, either wood chips is the primary source that we're going to look at if we have to temporarily use leaves or pine needles or something of that, we will do such. But that is a great thing to do for your perennial areas, even around like the flower beds. You know, only thing you want to be aware of is your home. If you have, you know, the problems or the potential problems of termites, if you put wood chips right up next to the foundation, that can be an issue. But if you have, raised beds or items like that for perennial flowers or mums, like we talked about in segment one, wood chips would be a very, very good use of such items. So that would be very good. But yeah, I would like to get wood chips around a lot of the portions of our garden, but it's baby steps before you can run. So keep that in mind.
Yep, definitely. So when is the right time to harvest Jerusalem artichokes, aka sunchokes?
Okay, so first of all, Holly, what are sunchokes or Jerusalem artichokes?
So Jerusalem artichokes or sunchokes are a perennial root crop, and they are tuber, actually. And the flower itself is related to like a sunflower or a dahlia. And they grow a beautiful flower. What you end up eating is the tuber, which grows below the surface of the ground. And they are a perennial. I don't know if I said that or not.
Say it again.
They're a perennial. And they are like a less starchy potato type vegetable.
Now, before you go wandering off to find some tubers in order to plant, when we talk about perennial, they are prolific. They don't spread like mint would. We've got, what would you say, Holly, 80, 90 square feet in which we have a patch of them in the physical ground that's been there for going on 8-10 years now. And they don't spread, but no matter how thorough you think you have removed the tubers from the ground, there are always tubers that remain that will regrow the next season or the next year's generation. I guess it was 3 or 4 years ago, we thought we had lost them. We dug all the bed up, got the largest tubers, replanted them, spaced them, I think like 2 foot apart or something. And now we've got more tubers, more plants than we know what to do with, which not necessarily is a bad problem. But the tubers are, they have a earthy taste. I would say mix a turnip, a rutabaga, and a potato together, and you probably will have a very close semblance of what a Jerusalem artichoke or sunchoke's flavor is. Some people will put them in a crock pot and roast them. We find it to be a very unique buttery flavor. When we talk buttery, we don't mean like the butter, but it's very soft and
rich, like a rich flavor.
And then other people find that to be inedible. You can eat these on a, you can eat these raw. Some people will take and cut them in little chips and then dip them in guacamole or ranch or whatever the case is. You can also take the tubers and you can ferment them. Now, we attempted to do this a couple of years ago. It was 2 years ago, and we had mild success for pickling them or fermenting them, I guess would be the proper. Holly, explain real quickly the difference between a fermentation and a pickling, because some people may think, well, isn't that kind of the same?
Well, there's a lacto-fermentation / pickling, where it's a pickling of fermentation, and then there's like a vinegar pickling.
Okay.
And so the fermentation pickling is when you're using a lot of salt to help kind of preserve the item, and it goes through this fermentation process. And it does, you can add different things, but it does give it kind of acidic tart flavor, like a vinegar pickle. And then there's the vinegar pickle, which is the more common.
Which, when we can, you know, pickling, you water bath, but you can refrigerate pickle. With the fermentation, you're using specific tools in order to make sure there's oxygen not getting into the batch as it does its process of converting certain elements into, you know, the fermentation stage, the layman's terms there. So we did that, and you can add different flavors. We tried barbecue powder, paprika. We just did it natural without any.
I think we used turmeric.
Turmeric was another one. So we will continue to explore that. We found that most of it, you want to do it in small batches. We were doing it in half-gallon batches, and it didn't work out because we found out that certain things didn't taste good, and then we had a half-gallon jar of fermented, horrible-tasting Jerusalem artichoke sunchokes in them. So not necessarily the best thing there. So you can grow these. You want to get them in the spring. You don't find them in the store very often because of their short shelf life. But you want to harvest them when the flowers have turned, which they are in our garden right now. And as the flowers die off or as they're being, you know, developed and in that blooming stage, you can start harvesting. We've harvested about 4 or 5 pounds right now. And then as the frost kills back, you can harvest them again. And you can harvest them all the way up till the ground freezes. Now, what many people or some people will do is they'll cut back the top stalks, which each plant will produce 3 to 8 pounds of tubers based on, you know, the soil conditions. They'll grow in poor soil very well. And the plant vertical growth will get 8 to 18, 20 feet tall. We've had them very, very tall before in our garden. So they'll cut back the stalks, leaving a foot of stalk above the ground so they can see where the roots would be, mountains of leaves over top of that particular area, and then harvesting them over the winter months, mimicking a refrigerator where the leaves will keep the soil chilled but won't allow it to freeze. Then you have access to your tubers, the Jerusalem artichokes. Also, what we have done and found to work very well is you take a bucket, put 2 inches of soil in the bucket from the garden, layer a layer of Jerusalem artichokes, put another 2 or 3 inches, and repeat until the bucket's full. We keep it in the stairway of our attic, which keeps it chilled but not frozen, and we have access to it very, very quickly and easily. If you just take your Jerusalem artichokes and put them on the counter, in about 48 hours, they're going to be non-edible because they're going to be all dried up. You can put them in a Ziploc bag and put them in the crisper of the fridge, and they'll keep for about a month. That's pretty much the lifespan of them there. So some multitude of different options. Real quickly, Holly, before we run out of time, garlic. You had a question come in about garlic.
Yep, my coworker and friend Deanna, she wants
a repeating question offerer, yeah, of the, and that's what we love. We love people who have questions because they come to the source, because why, you know, make a mistake when you can get the right answer the first time around?
Yeah, and I visited her earlier this summer. It was like, I don't know, August, but and saw her garden, and she has a nice little setup there, and she was asking about growing garlic, so I told her, and she said, can I grow the garlic that's in my fridge? And I said, did you get it from a grocery store? And she told me where she got it from, and I said, well, that was likely grown hydroponically and is not going to reproduce as you want. So I actually went, I gave her some of our garlic. But what happens is that when you buy this from the store, it usually has a growth inhibitor on it because it's getting shipped, whether it be from China or Mexico, somewhere further away.
It's tiny.
And it's pretty generic. So, yeah.
And generic meaning the variety, and generic meaning the flavor. It's so bland.
Right.
When we give garlic away, we say, you know, like you told Deanna, only use a quarter of what you were normally using from store-bought because the flavor is so enriched that it's night and day.
I forgot to tell her that, but she'll be okay.
Yeah, she can hear it. hopefully she's listening now, she's already experienced the problem.
Might be too late. But anyway, so that's the thing, is that you want to grow garlic that is going to be, whether it be from a local source, your farmer's market, what have you, from the grocery store.
Big Elk Garlic Farm, bigelkgarlicfarm.com. They've got garlic that will meet and exceed your expectations, so you can certainly get it from there. They still have some garlic left for you to plant in your garden.
For sure.
And we are out of time, and we thank you for yours. Did you miss any portion of the show today? Well, you can revisit it by going to the website, thewisconsinvegetablegardener.com. Do not let the name fool you. A lot of other content there for all gardeners. Clicking on the Season 4 tab at the top of the page, or you can send us an email at gardentalkradio@gmail.com. And we will send you the link to this show. Tell your garden friends and your garden buddies that this show is on the air. You can also check out past seasons on podcast replay on our website, thewisconsinvegetablegardener.com. And that's how our message is spread. Join us next week on the program when we'll be talking about winter composting, as well as author Pamela Crawford will be with us. And as always, we'll be answering your garden questions. So until next week for
Holly Baird,
I'm Joy Baird, and we will see you in the garden.